Inside each of us are 3 billion letters of DNA that control how our bodies put themselves together in the first place and how our systems operate day to day. And what Edinburgh University's Peter Joshi wanted to understand is how these genetic letters also influence how long we're going to live for.
Each of us has got 3 billion letters of DNA, and we differ from each other typically at about 3 million different places on the genome, which is our collection of DNA. And we're interested in how those differences might affect how long you live relative to how long I might live.
Now, that sort of study takes a lifetime to do, which you don't have. None of us do. So how have you approached it?
That's a really good question. So the problem, as you highlight, is that if we were to recruit a whole lot of people in their, say, 40s, take their blood, read their DNA, we would perhaps have to wait 50 or more years until they died to understand how their DNA had affected how long they lived. What we realised was, if we take your DNA, say Chris, we could ask you how long your parents or your grandparents had lived. And because your DNA is, of course, their DNA, we're able to understand how their DNA actually affected how long they lived.
So the obvious approach here is that because I'm the product of the mixing of the genes of both parents, I therefore am a proxy for what's going on in my parents. So if we find out what happens to them, we can make a reasonable prediction about what genetically is driving that.
That's right. Genetically, you're half your mum and half your dad. And we can use that and a little bit of clever statistics to make fairly precise probabilistic inferences about what your mum and dad's DNA are.
So talk us through then how you actually did this. What was the resource you used in order to get access to the sort of data you need to make those deductions?
In essence, we took 500,000 people, had their DNA read, asked them, is your mum alive? If so, what age is she? If not, what age did she die at? And the same for your dad. We didn't actually gather all of that data. We've been really lucky. There's a fantastic resource, UK Biobank, where the UK's Medical Research Council gathered together 500,000 people and asked these sort of questions. And then we topped up that with 24 other cohorts from around the UK, Europe and the United States to give us an even larger resource.
And basically, if you look at enough people enough times, you're going to start to see hotspots in the genome, regions, which appear to be associated with the answers to those questions about how old your parents were when you died. And so you can begin to say, well, that region must have some kind of role or association in how long we live.
That's right. By having enough people, we can pinpoint specific DNA letters amongst your 3 billion that are associated with how long your mum lived or your dad lived.
Now, we know there are some regions of the genome that have already been quite powerfully linked to longevity. So did your study pull out those ones we already know about?
That's right. I mean, in fact, remarkably few regions were known to associate with longevity directly. As recently as 2014, there was only one robust association at a genomic region called ApoE, which associates with Alzheimer's disease. Over the last 2 or 3 years, myself and other research groups around the world had shown 3 or 4 regions robustly associated with lifespan. And then our study increased that to 12 robust associations. As you ask, we did verify the previously known loci in many cases. In some cases, we actually refuted some tentative findings that people had made before as well.
And what are the 12 regions that you've now been able to highlight through this? And what do they do?
The 12 regions, essentially, we see mainly influence cardiometabolic health, so basically heart disease. Alongside those, we're seeing regions that, interestingly, are affecting propensity to smoke. You might not have thought of whether you're a smoker or not as a genetic trait, but in fact, it turns out the way your brain responds to nicotine is influenced by your genetics. That, in turn, influences how much you smoke, and that, in turn, affects how long you live.
So you've got these 12 regions. If I take a person who has all the risk factors and a person who has none of them, how many added years do I get through having none of them compared to someone who's got all of them?
So I don't have that precise number to hand. It must be about 6. Typically, the effects that we see, if you carry the good variant and I carry the less beneficial variant, it would be around 6. So I would estimate it's about 6 years difference in the way that you describe. But the chances of you having all the good ones and me having all the bad ones are pretty small.
Are you surprised that you found these associations for so few regions? 12 doesn't seem like a very big number when you've got such an extensive genome that we have.
Well, that's right. We've studied height, for example, and with about 250,000 people, we've found hundreds of genomic regions that affect how tall you are. Essentially, there's two reasons for that. Firstly, we've had to ask questions about parents' lifespan. So the statistical signal is diluted. But really, the main reason is that actually signals of lifespan effects from the genome have these relatively small effect sizes and therefore require much bigger sample sizes. So what we would expect is if we were to increase this sample from 1 million to, say, 3 million, that we would begin to see many more tens of signals. It's just that we want to be really confident when we report in an association.
Where are we going with this then? Do you foresee a situation where we will take a healthy person, inverted commas, and we throw a genetic analysis at them like this, and this highlights a potential set of risk factors that may truncate or extend their life? Is that where you're sort of going with this?
I think that may well be where society is going. Basically, I think two sorts of screening are going to come out. One is for rare diseases you might be a carrier for and pass on a susceptibility. And the other is common complex diseases with these small effects that we've been talking about today, really. People will be told, essentially, whether they're in the top or bottom part of the risk spectrum for the disease. And I've seen some very nice work in Estonia, for example, that highlighted risk scores for heart disease and how if someone had a BMI of, say, 35, was obese and were to lose weight, the dramatic difference they can make to their risk of heart disease if they're in that part of the population that is susceptible to heart disease in the first place due to their genetics.
Peter Joshi from the University of Edinburgh.